Grab your glasses or swig from the neck. Here comes the Plaidcast Amateur Lounge. We'll be meeting here weekly to bring you a listening experience like no other. Intended to nurture the amateur community and enhance the camaraderie that does exist amongst you. We'll chat with guests about many topics that just might help you on your journey. Your journey to becoming a better amateur and a better you. Have you heard? The latest issue of Plaid Horse magazine just dropped and it's full of all the goods. You haven't read it yet? For real? Well, let me just give you a tidbit of advice. You need to go to the closest horse show or tack shop and grab a copy before they're gone. Oh, you don't have time? So here's a secret that's not even a secret. Visit theplaidhorse.com, subscribe, and they'll deliver a copy right to you. It'll even have your name on it so you don't lose it. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but call me when you've read it because we're going to need to be friends off until you do. Don't delay. Visit theplaidhorse.com and steer clear of having deja vu of this very conversation. Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining me again. Today, I'm speaking with a lovely lady from Oakville, Canada, who I know personally and think the world of. Carrie Thomas has been through more than many in her equestrian journey with her horse, Romeo. And what do you know? She stands tall to tell the tales to us. From chatting the roller coaster ride of horse showing to confidence stealers and warm-up ring antics, top up your glasses and enjoy this introduction to my friend Carrie Thomas.
Dust off my shame and let's do this.
So here's something I want to know. I want to know, really, truly, I want to know about the emotional roller coaster of horse showing and what it's comparable to.
Oh.
Right? Because no matter what, that's a thing. Especially for amateurs. Not that I'm trying to single amateurs out, but it's an emotional roller coaster for sure. And how does one prepare and then deal with that?
That's a really great question. I've only been back riding on the A's since, I guess 2016 was my first year, right? And I only came back to riding in 2015 after 20-year absence. So, and it was really I remember my mom saying, oh, I'll pay for your ticketed schooling. I'm like, Mom, we're going to just add that on my show bill.
Right?
Like,
don't worry about it.
It's so nice that at 70, you want to help, but she's going for her wallet. I'm like, no.
No.
So cute. But I just wanted to barf. So I had the same kind of competitive streak, like when I was a kid. You know, when I was a kid, if I didn't win, I would cry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you find that you returned with that same streak?
100%.
You just, you still feel exactly the same way if you don't win, you want to cry?
Not so much now. I did spend some time going to a sports psychologist.
Oh, good. That's a plus.
A couple years ago. And yeah, because I needed to kind of get my head in the game a little bit. And I might be oversharing. I had someone catch ride for me when I had an injury. And that individual really pulled a number on my head. And my confidence went to probably an all-time lifetime low.
Why?
Because I think sometimes when you get a catch rider, the catch rider is obviously better than you. And when they say, oh, you know, I'll get you to your end goal.
Mm.
You know, my goal like that year was to get to the Royal Winter Fair, which was a lifetime goal. And for someone to do a few shows on my horse, oh, I'll get you there. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when that person was riding my horse, I call them the big guns. You know,
right.
The big guns weren't out because it was the early spring shows. So that person did pretty well for the first few shows.
Yeah.
And she did a real number on my head and just saying, you know, I'll get you there and don't worry about it and I'll get you there. And even when I was at the Royal, she sent me a text message the day of the Royal when I qualified against the big guns all summer saying, you know, I'm dressed and ready to go if you need help.
So do you think that was all unintentional?
I'm sure her intentions were not
to make your confidence take it away.
Yeah, I don't think anybody ever goes out to say, I'm going to take their confidence down.
Right.
You know, I think she genuinely was like, I want to help you. Mm-hmm. But the side effect of that was I needed a sports psychologist because the next year, every time I saw that person, I'd choke.
Really?
Choke. Yo, I'd go in the ring where, you know, the year before I had great rides. I'd go in the ring, I'd see her, I'd like, I'm just done.
Yeah.
I just go home now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you compare it to in life? Horse showing.
Oh.
It has to be that you get there, you're in a great mood, you feel good, and you know, you do all the things, the boots are shiny, you're dressed, you're ready to go, you're going to show at this time, you have the great communication, and then you get on your horse, you get into the warm-up area, and for some people, that the warm-up area, that's the demise. Right there, it starts, right?
I think about, you know, the first time I, when I went to Greenhaven, the first show, Anne was taking me to the ring, and we were in the warm up ring, and Romeo stopped, and I fell off. And she said, "You know, she's lovely. She's like, you can scratch. There's no shame. We can pull out. There's nothing." And I said, "Dust off my shame and let's do this before, because I broke my fingers when I fell."
Oh my God.
And I said, "Dust off my shame and let's do this before my fingers swell and I can't use them."
Oh my goodness.
So.
That takes some gumption.
It was that was crazy.
Yeah, for sure.
Crazy. So for me, the majority of my big accidents have happened in the warm-up ring.
Right, which I'm sure leaves a little bad taste in your mouth about that.
Yeah, I would avoid the warm-up ring if at all possible.
Yeah.
And even when I was at the Royal, because the ceiling is so low in their warm-up ring and it was so crowded, I said to Scott, "You can jump Romeo in that ring. I will not."
So, that's a mind trick. That's what
like,
that is.
He's like, "You have to do one jump." And I said, "Fine, make it 2 feet. I'll jump that one. Once we're in the ring, I'll be fine."
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, there's so much, almost, I'm going to say pomp and circumstance. It might not be the right turn of phrase, but pomp and circumstance to having your boots polished, wearing a lovely show jacket, having your tack and polishing it and taking care, and your horse braided. Your horse feels important. You know, Romeo, when he heard his name over the announcer say his name, he just puffed up, and he would always pick a canter when he heard his name. That was, when he heard Romeo, he was like canter, but you could feel him physically puff up with, showtime.
Yeah.
He was like on, you know,
mm-hmm.
which is a really special feeling to feel in another animal. I don't know if everybody's like that about riding, but I am. I'm
for
all
sure.
about the horse, the being of the horse and what their experience is too. So.
And it would be fair to say that during a typical show day, you would maybe go through no less than 5 emotions, 5 different emotions, 20.
If I think about a metaphor for emotions, I would use a tornado. So I would use a tornado, but in there you have like on each turn of the swirl, you have like happy, sad, scared, confident, brave, chicken, neurotic. You know, everybody says they're fine, and fine stands for the F word, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. When someone says they're fine, that's what that means. I'm fine. Pick one of those or all of them.
Yep.
So.
In a nutshell, it is emotional. It is an emotional roller coaster.
And then you're exhausted, and then you have no, you know, after a long day, you are emotionally depleted. I think sometimes when we're physically tired, this is actually true for healing from physical things and surgeries. When we're tired, all of our energy goes into rejuvenating and feeling better. And it detracts from your ability to cope emotionally because all the energy you would normally have to cope emotionally is going into, you know, staying up and moving and all of those other things. So,
yeah. So then I go back to my original question where I cut you off. Comparable. What's it comparable to? Horse showing.
So I could say improv. Having done improv at Second City for 6 years.
Oh, that's right.
It would be comparable. It would also be comparable to doing like it almost what feels like a life or death presentation at work.
Oh my God. I just threw up in my mouth. I just threw up in my mouth hearing you say that.
Like if you had to do like a life or death presentation for work and you could not make an error, that's what it feels like.
So why does everybody keep going back to it?
I also surf, and I think that there's a lot of commonality. Actually, the sports psychologist pointed out to me that there's a lot of in common between surfing and horseback riding, which I actually call dirt surfing, by the way. So let's go dirt surfing. And the commonalities are that you're riding a 1,500-pound moose with the temperament of a 4-year-old. Mm-hmm. You have, like, whatever veneer of control you think you have, you know, one plastic bag goes flying by.
You've lost it. It's over.
It's gone. So, you know, with surfing, you can paddle your guts out to get the wave you want. Doesn't mean you're going to get it. And when you get it, doesn't mean that it's going to be a good rideable wave. Mm. And it's the same for horses. You can try your guts out at a horse show. Doesn't mean you're going to have a good class. You got 2 minutes. You got 2 minutes. And it doesn't mean you're going to have a good class. And it doesn't mean that even if you did have a good class, even if you have best class, depending on what the rest of the competition's like, you're not going to win. You know, yeah. I remember going in with Romeo and we laid down the bomb of a trip. It was flawless. I don't even think I got an 8. I think I got a reserve.
Right.
But I also ride in the 36 plus, which we all know is the toughest division.
Tough division, yeah.
And I'm not looking forward to going back this season if we have one, because all those kids that aged up.
Yes.
You know, when you're in a 50-year-old body, you cannot compete with a 36-year-old body and abilities, because 36-year-olds don't hurt like I do.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So the feeling of jubilation, or I don't know how to express that feeling, but that just must overtake all of that up and down tornado roller coaster ride of emotion that you experience on a horse show daily basis. It just must, you must get home and go, huh, that was amazing. Had a great day. And that's what keeps you coming back for more, right?
I'm going to compare to surfing again. In surfing, you can paddle your fratukas off and everybody thinks that surfing is all the time on a board. Actual riding a wave is maybe 21 seconds,
mm-hmm.
maybe 70 if you have a really good long wave. I don't think I've ever spent more than 40 seconds on a wave. It's the addiction of when everything's in perfect alignment.
Yeah.
Right? And I think it's the same. It's, we keep going back to horses because A, they are compassionate and lovely beings and we all love them.
Mm-hmm.
And they give us their best every day, which is amazing. And when we have everything in perfect alignment, that's, to me, that's the addiction. When we have the perfect striding up to a fence, the horse is like listening and we're totally at one with them. That's the thing that keeps us going back.
Yeah.
Is being completely in tune and aligned to your horse in a moment. That's, yeah. I think that's the addiction that we all keep going back to.
I remember it being, I haven't ridden or jumped a horse in many years, let's say more than 2. But I remember when the jumps get a little bigger and you spend a little more time suspended in the air, everything leading up to and jumping becomes almost slow motion and makes you feel euphoric. And if you do that 8 times, of course you're coming back to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no better feeling that I could ever feel anyways.
I can say as an adult in the show ring approaching each fence,
I'm ready to barf.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready to barf. And I usually say, oh, my God, I can't do this. I'm right? not going to jump that fence. I can't do this. And sometimes I have like a little bit of baby barf in my mouth.
Swallow it down.
And I'm only jumping 3 feet. It's not like I'm doing 1.20 meters. And even last year, my friend loaned me her horse so I could try the jumpers.
Mm-hmm.
One show. And the deal was I had to ride that horse in the, it was Margaret Elson's horse, Chapeau Utopia, who's a lovely, lovely KWPN. And Anne said I could do the jumpers if I could keep him contained in the hunters. So we did the hunters 1 week because he's got a very large step and he likes to go. And if I could do that, then I could do the jumpers. So when we did the jumpers, every fence, I was like, I can't do this. So, but Chappie was, you know, he's a big dude. He was like 17 hands and I'm 5 feet. So he could walk over all of them. He's like, no worries. I got this. And
yeah.
He is never a stopper. Never. So, never. So I could trust him. And I think that's the other thing too, right? You have to trust your horse.
Yeah.
And with Romeo, it was an exercise in trust for him and skill, because if I was not perfectly centered and perfectly matched up to jump the fence, he'd be like, oh, I can't.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't even just stop. He'd stop and flick me off his back. And I would just go, like, there was no hanging on to his flicks.
Right.
I just go flying. Oh, I can't. So, you know, you have to trust your partner to get over the fences and get you around the course. But when you can't trust them, how do you keep going back? Right.
Yeah.
And how do you keep going back when you can't trust them? That's a tough thing.
Yeah.
So.
Would that mean that, you know, are you an advocate for like a ringside amateur only VIP tent?
Oh, that's a good question.
Has anyone ever asked you that before?
No.
Never.
No.
I'd like to take a poll.
I think that's a good poll to take.
I'm going to interlude with a little story here. I did the gate in Ocala for a bunch of years, and I forget names, but I definitely remember being there. There was one rider who I was familiar with, and again, can't remember her name, but anyways, she was an amateur, and she was a nervous amateur, and she showed in the olders. And I remember she would be like on me first thing in the morning about when and where and how and all the things, and she would sit and she would analyze and do all of those things and almost just work herself up into this inability to step foot into the ring. It would finally be go time for her. She'd come down. Her trainer would school the horse in the schooling area. So she never dealt with that. And then she would come and she'd get back on. She'd come up to the gate. You know, I'd have to make sure the timing was really perfect with her. And she'd be like, okay, I'm ready. And I'm like, whoa, what happened to you? Went back to the barn, threw about four or five of them back. She said to me one point that she had to be drunk to set foot into the ring, do the eight jumps and come out. And she was a rock star at it. I mean, she didn't have to school in the schooling area. She would just swing a leg over the horse. She'd get up to the gate. She'd be like, yeah, I'm feeling this. I'm good. She'd do her eight jumps and away you go. Take her ribbon.
You know why I wouldn't do that?
Danger.
Health and safety first and foremost.
Yeah.
When I did improv, I like would want to puke before going on stage or before we did stuff. And I remember thinking I needed to be drunk to go on stage myself. And then I felt like, because with improv, you have to be so in the moment and you have to be so open to whatever comes at you so that you can respond to it and work with it. It's called saying yes, and, right? Let's go to Mars. Yes, and let's take my car. Yes, and let's pull over and do some jumping jacks. And let's do some shots at the bar, right? Like, yes. And so like you're doing that in improv all the time. And because that's how you create a scene and hopefully some jokes. And I look at people like John Belushi, who couldn't go do SNL unless he was high as a kite.
Right.
Or say Marty Short. He would say that anyway. He would say that he was probably high half the time he did stuff at SCTV and stuff. So I'm not outing him, but yeah, I think I would watch those guys and think about how they ended up blowing their lives because they felt that they couldn't do what was supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
Right.
And in the now, be in the now.
In the moment. Yeah. You know, for that woman who would go back and suck back.
Four
or five glasses of wine to be drunk to do it. If you have to be drunk to do something, then it's not for you.
Right.
Or you got to go do the homework on your head first so that you can remember why you wanted to do it in the first place.
That's not to say that I wouldn't support a ringside VIP amateur tent, though.
I would also support, when I rode at another farm when I first came back to riding, we had a water cooler and we filled it with Sauvignon Blanc.
Shut up.
Called it Lady Water.
Shut up. Uh-huh. How about the Capri Suns we were talking about the other
day?
Exactly. We need
wine in Capri Sun format for ladies.
Right. Just hide the actual what it was.
You should call it Lady Water.
Lady
grown-ups.
You could be a millionaire. A millionaire. You could market that just to horse people and be a millionaire.
Lady Water.
Yeah.
I'm going to now go talk to a winery.
Absolutely.
Maybe all of them. Hey, we'll who wants in?
We'll do a jingle for you.
Who doesn't want a good Lady Water?
I do every day.
When Bailey's for 9 a.m. just to take the edge off again.
We just call it Sunday coffee. This is not an advocate for anybody showing up to the ring drunk, by the way.
No.
Or thinking they need to function on alcohol to get through life. We got through it and we're here and we're telling stories.